I am joined by Stephen, an author and a man who has recently penned a book that I think a lot of Hartlepool United fans are going to enjoy reading. Stephen, first of all, thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us. Tell us what prompted this idea to look into Hartlepool United's history and its heritage in the way that you have.
Well, thanks, Rob. Thanks for the invitation to be with you. What prompted the idea of the book? As we all know, I mean, you don't need me to tell you, there's sometimes a bit of doom and gloom around the club with all that's been happening lately, the last few seasons. Suffice to say, they've not been easy times for the club. So in that context, I was prompted to say, well, look, we all know things aren't perfect at Hartlepool United. Everybody knows that. But there's still a lot to celebrate. And the strapline of my book is celebrating Hartlepool United's finest. So, I mean, anyone can criticise, anyone can moan, that's easy. And sometimes with just cause. But on the other side of that is this is still a great little club. And there's still people pulling their weight and doing everything and punching above their weight to keep the club going. So I wanted to celebrate and focus on the good stuff of Hartlepool United.
And you've discovered quite some interesting stories. We were talking off air and you were saying you had so many people coming forward to be involved with this. You were saying, I just wish I could have involved everybody's stories, everybody who came to the forefront and shared their stories with you. So have you been quite taken aback by the response that you had to this?
To be honest with you, Rob, I must confess, when I first launched the project and spoke to the publishers about it, I was a little bit apprehensive. Because they gave me a contract for a 60,000 word count book, and I thought, oh heck, am I going to fulfil that? Will there be enough material? Because with all due respect and affection, we're not talking a big club here. So anyway, put out some appeals in the local media for information, and I have to say, as you've alluded, the response was generous, heartwarming. Affectionate, funny memories of the club, stories of players, managers, fans, predominantly fans, which is where I wanted to pitch it. No pun intended. Mm-hmm. And that's been heartwarming to such an extent, and I deeply regret this, and I want to apologise on air. Some of the stories I simply haven't been able to include. Not because of the stories, no reflection on those whatsoever. They're all appreciated, but I haven't had space. And the publisher's word count is law. Can't do any, no pun intended. I can't do anything about that. But I managed to put in as many as I possibly could. So I apologise if anybody's work has not been included.
All it means, Stephen, is it's lined up perfectly for a second book. That's all that means.
I'm glad you said that. Thank you. Hope the publishers are listening.
Yes, let's hope they are. And you've got some brilliant tales in there. Former manager Danny Wilson talking about the promotions. You've also got a link to Brian Clough in there as well, and I'm sure people will enjoy reading those particular accounts.
Absolutely. I mean, you've got to include Brian Clough if you're writing a book about Hartlepool. And I have to say, credit where it's due, his sons, Brian's sons, Nigel and Simon, they've bent over backwards to help. I approached them, both at Mansfield Town these days. And Simon in particular picked up the phone, sent me a number of text messages saying, we'd love to help because, you know, Dad really admired Hartlepool United, a soft spot for Hartlepool, the people, the town. But they said that the caveat is we were only toddlers at the time when we lived there. But they said they do remember Dad, Brian Clough, Dad coming home umpteen times and saying how training at Seton Carew, they used to take the team down to Seton Carew, he said it was the cold. He said he'd never played football anywhere as cold as training on the beach at St. Crew. And then there's another tale from that time. Clough and Taylor, this was. Peter Taylor's daughter has also been very, very helpful, very grateful to her. She said that the manager's job at the time was not just the team, it was cleaning out the dressing room, tidying up the stadium, mending the pitch, getting the kits ready, everything, jack of all trades in their day, Clough and Taylor, when they were cutting their teeth. And Peter Taylor said, we spent more on Jay's fluid than we ever did on players because the stadium was such a mess. So he said the budget for Jay's fluid exceeded the transfer budget at the time. I don't think that's entirely true, but not far off the mark. So yeah, very grateful to everyone who's responded.
What are some of the favorite stories that you came across that you've put into the book?
Well, you see, a few contributors spoke to me about a man called Fred Westgarth. I have to be honest, I never really acknowledged Fred before my time. I think he was manager in 1947, 1953, something like that. Had a fair few years. And these old timers who wrote to me, watching pools forever and ever since the 40s or 50s, and delighted to see a book about pools. They said Fred was fantastic because he had nothing to work with. He had no budget, no resources at his disposal. And yet under Fred Westgarth's management, 1957, January 1957, Hartlepool's held Man United to a 3-3 draw. Well, they were 3-0 down in the cup. They came back to 3-3 and then narrowly lost 4-3 FA Cup tie. So much so, Matt Busby, none other than Matt Busby, said that was the toughest game of his managerial career, coming up against Westgarth's Pools. And 1950, I think, sometime, Hartlepool had Chelsea in the cup at home. Chelsea, the reigning champions of England, only beat them 1-0. Everyone thought it'd be a massacre. It wasn't anything of the sort. The point being, Fred Westgarth, in context, with no money, nothing at his disposal. I've become very fond of him, although it's all news to me. So much so, the other day I was at home last weekend to see my mum. I found out, and this is sad, I know, but bear with me. I found out where Fred Westgarth lived when he was manager. So I popped round to see his house in Hartlepool. What struck me was that it was just a handful of streets away from the ground. And I thought, wow, there's a different era of football. A manager never got much acclaim, but did brilliant things, hold him in high regard, living amongst the fans, in the community, as we call it now. So much so that I've just pitched an idea to my publishers. Could I do another book on Fred Westgarth and the likes of Danny Wilson, the likes of Neil Cooper, Cluffy as well. And I've pitched it to them called Managing Well, a spotlight on what it's like to be a manager at lower league level without the glamour, without the budget. Haven't heard back from them yet, so we'll see. But I'd love to acknowledge just what the likes of Westgarth did in context, because it's actually brilliant management.
And in there, you also have some tributes to Cyril Knowles, who of course has a stand named after him in the current stadium, Michael Maidens as well. So some real heartfelt tributes to people who will forever live on in the memory of Pooleys, but sadly no longer with us.
Very much so. I was quite touched. One of the many responses I received was from Michael Maiden's mum and dad. I was very touched by that, and I agonized over whether to approach them. Michael Maiden's mum said, pick up the phone, speak to Michael's dad. He'll give you an interview. She said, I can't. It's still too painful. We all understand that. But she said, his dad will chat to you, and you'll have some stuff for your book. So I held on to that message for ages and ages. And in fact, I put in the book, I declined that opportunity out of respect for them and their grief. I wanted to include Michael Maidens, and I have. There's been, I think, there's three tributes to him within the book anyway, so certainly not overlooked, and that's important. But by the same token, as an author, as a writer, professionally, commercially, I didn't feel comfortable approaching people who were still grieving, always will be, in order to put it in a book. For my livelihood, to be blunt, that didn't sit well with me. So grateful, very grateful for their cooperation, not dismissing that, but by the same token, not willing to intrude on their personal feelings just for the sake of me, because Michael's already acknowledged in the book. Likewise, Cyril Knowles. I sit in the Cyril Knowles stand. I get to a few home games each season. I was there
Good
last
man.
Sunday for the Glasgow Rangers game. In the usual seat. So Cyril Knowles is part of my life now. So I sit there and tend to think of him a fair bit. I think there's a photograph of the stand in the book as well. So by no means forgotten, as you rightly say.
And I have to ask you this one, an Egyptian Pooley.
Again, I've never heard of this fella. A chap called Tewfik Abdullah, Tewfik, Tewfik Abdullah, who played for Egypt in the World Cup, I think, round about the 1930s, give or take. I might be wrong on that. And came to the attention because of the international profile he had as an Egyptian footballer, came to the attention of British football clubs, played for Derby County. Which is surreal enough in itself, going from Egypt to Derby County. And then a number of clubs, he became a bit of a journeyman footballer, did Tewfik, played for Hartlepool. And it's a great story. It's amusing, it's quite surreal, it's fascinating. And it apparently was quite popular. And then went on subsequently to, I think he became manager of Canada. I have no idea how these things came about, but good luck to him. He pursued a career as a player manager with a relative degree of success and turned out the fools as well. It's quite a bizarre story, but all the better for it to be included.
This sounds hugely fascinating. And I imagine for you sat there trying to then collate and put this into one, some sort of order, but two, trying to, as you said earlier, trying to fit everything in. I imagine this was a labor of love in certain ways, because so many stories, so many incredible memories, and uncovering, sort of lifting the stones and finding these stories must have been hugely fascinating for you.
Exactly. It was exactly that. And for example, Danny Wilson. I got in touch with Danny, and I was doing my shopping one day, and Danny rang me on my mobile. He said, "Hi, it's Danny Wilson here. I'm here writing a book, blah blah blah." And I was actually standing there with my carrier bags in one hand in the supermarket, and people milling around. Now, Danny, bless his heart, he could not have been more helpful, brilliant, generous with his time and his insights. He didn't realize that wasn't the actual interview. He thought I was interviewing him there and then, and I couldn't get a word in edgeways because he was so enthusiastic and affectionate towards pools. He carried on with the interview, so I thought, oh, I can't record this, I can't take notes. I'm standing here in, I think it was Morrison's. Carry a bag of shopping. I've got Danny Wilson, ex-international footballer, on the phone. All these people milling around. So I had to, more or less, memorize the interview.
Wow.
And when that was the best part of an hour. He was on the phone telling me about the record-breaking season and this player and that player. But what was interesting, talking about lifting the stones of that, he came to Pools. He was at Pools on the back of a relegation. So I wasn't a happy place. And as a manager, even with his pedigree as a player and so on, your confidence is not that thick. It's not very strong because you hear the criticism, you're not immune to it. And as a human being, he was quite worried that this wasn't going to work, and it didn't get off to a great start, but then it started to gel. And so behind the story was that they went on a record-breaking, I think it was 23 games unbeaten, something like that, under Danny Wilson, were promoted. Great job, and he's got his place in the history of the club. But as a human being, he was initially slightly panicky that this wasn't going to work out. Then you're talking about someone's livelihood. Then you're talking about someone's career, someone's reputation. So let's assuming it hadn't worked out, he gets sacked. That's not unheard of at pools for a manager to be sacked. Then he goes to another club with that on his CV. So all that's going through his head while the fans are seeing the game, seeing the players, trying to make sense of the signings. He's got that on his mind. So although it's quite odd speaking to him in the supermarket, I'm grateful to him and grateful to him for that personal insight as well. So the pressure on a manager is, I'm as guilty as anyone. We all go and we all boo and we all, think we can do better. And maybe that's true in some cases recently at pools, I don't know. But I think if I'm honest, we fail to recognize there's a man doing his job there. And like any of us, you in your work, me in mine, we're doing our best. And we're hoping for the best, but it comes with a lot of pressure as well. So I've tried to take that on board now when I go to watch games, bear that in mind a bit.
And where does your love of pool stem from then, Stephen? You're for those who are listening to us on the radio and can't see you, you are sat in your blue and white stripe, your Hartlepool United shirt, wearing the badge proudly on your chest. I can see the blue walls behind you as well. So the room is blue and white also. So where does your love of Hartlepool United grow from?
Well, slightly unusual story, but I'll try to keep it brief. My parents worked for the Salvation Army full time. And within that, they were appointed to a town or a district at the army's discretion, just to go to various places. And when I was 16, I'm 59 now, when I was 16, mum and dad were appointed to Hartlepool, to the Salvation Army Centre on Park Road, Lansdowne Road on the corner. Just turned up, TS269JL. I remember the postcode well. And when I turned up, I'll be honest, and you must forgive me if this ruins the broadcast, I've never heard of Hartlepool United. Simply because with mum and dad's work, we'd moved every 2 years when I was a kid, all over the country, or England, Wales. So came to Hartlepool, it might as well have been anywhere else. However, I was 16, I just left school. I got a job in Whitby Street as a security guard, nighttime security guard. And all the guys I worked with were poolies. And so that's pretty much all they talked about, really, was Hartlepool and that, turned up for the night shift. There's nothing else really to do. So I thought, Hartlepool United, I'll start going along. So I took myself along to a few games. And from then on, increasingly latterly, like many people in the book, actually, this phrase occurred time and time again, you're hooked. I don't know what it is, because frankly, there are better and bigger clubs in the region. We lived in Hartlepool and then subsequently Billingham. And I've moved away work-wise. I've had to move away, live down in Hertfordshire now, but get to as many games as I can a season, maybe 15, 20 games a season here, there, and everywhere. And it grows on you, the club. That's all I can say. I couldn't tell you why, because it's not easy. Supporting Hartlepool is kind of a death wish about people who do that. But you love the club. You love the club. And now, since delving into the history, which has been a great education, the likes of Fred Westgarth, Danny Wilson, Neil Cooper, Brian Honour, these legends. I feel part of the club. I was there Sunday for the Glasgow Rangers game, as I say. I sat there, I thought, I'm part of this now. And I don't think there's any escape. I think I'm hooked and I love it. And we all hope for better times, but hey, yeah, so now That's how it is. You get hooked somehow, and honored to be a poolie, an adopted poolie. I must stress that.
And for people listening to this, Stephen, and thinking, wow, they sound like some brilliant stories, and maybe some stories that they weren't aware of also, and just wanting to get their hands on this and have a read, where can they get the book from?
Well, that's easy. I hope they do buy it. You can go into Waterstones, go into WH Smith's, and simply order the book. It's available now, pre-order. Poolies at Heart by Stephen Poxon, that'll find it. Failing that, if you don't want to do it in a shop, go directly online to the publishers. They're called Pitch Publishing. They're easy to find, Pitch Publishing. And there, all you've got to do is put my name in, or Poolies at Heart, Hartlepool United. There's not a plethora of books about Hartlepool, so it's easy to find. That's the point I'm making. So either WH Smith's, Waterstones, any of the bookshops, really, any bookshop, or Pitch Publishing online, search for it there, you'll find it. You can pre-order it now. And I hope people do. I hope they enjoy the book.